Dr. Joseph Resnick, and Guy Kramer, I would like to welcome both of you to the program. And, you know, this is radio, so we have to learn to, I guess, recognize your voices so we know who we're hearing. Dr. Resnick, say hi.
Hi. Good evening. Art, thank you.
You're very welcome. And Guy Kramer, if you'd say hello.
Good morning to those on the East Coast, and good night to those on the West Coast.
Yes, that should be a pretty good voice recognition right there. All right. First of all, I've got to say, gentlemen, I'm surprised, kind of, that we're doing this program at all. Are you?
Dr. Resnick?
Let me start by thanking you, Art, for the opportunity of this forum on behalf of ASET and ComSec, and thank all of the families, all of our brothers at the 101st RRC deployed in theater globally. I'm proud to be here. I'm happy to participate, and I'm not regretful at all, and I'm here to answer any question that I might be able to answer this evening for you.
Well said. But what I mean is I'm surprised they're letting you do this program.
Well, Art, I'm happy to report historical information to you and information that's in the public domain. And I can only give you that which is in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. Of the totality of the information that you could discuss tonight, what percentage of it do you think is not in the public domain? If you were totally free to discuss any darn thing you wanted to be, what percentage of it is secret?
Of what I've seen, 99%.
99% is secret?
Of what I've seen, but I don't see everything. I only see bits and pieces of it. And by the time I get it, it's sometimes it's 10 years later before I realize the significance of what has been done or what project I've worked on.
I see.
Guy, on the other hand, is not under such stringent requirements. And, Guy, maybe you want to speak to that a little bit.
Well, I'm a Canadian citizen, so I'm not privy to any kind of U.S. classified information on these programs.
So, in other words, you can't even make a mistake.
Exactly.
Guy can say anything he wants to, and nobody can touch him. across the border.
Yeah. My grandfather, who you alluded to there, had actually developed the DEW line, the Distant Early Warning Line, and had developed the technology for that. So I have some insight into some of the technology and have stumbled upon many of the items that have since become public domain with my website out there.
Hmm. All right.
That's sort of how I got involved with Guy a couple of years ago.
How? His website, you mean, or what?
Actually, yeah. It was recommended that I take a look at Guy's website and that I have a conversation with Guy, and that led to realization of synergies and interests from people with whom I'm associated. So Guy and I have become friends in the interim, and we enjoy a personal and professional working relationship and knowledge of the sciences in which we're concerned, and we're having some fun along the way. This is part of the fun, by the way.
Okay. All right. Before we move to HAARP, which is mainly what I wish to talk with you about on a lot of levels, Dr. Resnick sent me an email prior to the program and asked me to keep the lid on it for the moment, and I just can't do that.
Let's get that out of the way so we can get to the meat and bones of this.
Okay, this has to do with the bird flu.
Okay, it has to do with the bird flu. What I asked Guy to do is to post the email that I sent to you, actually sent to Lisa earlier today,
right?
With regard to your discussion and your concerns, because I share your concerns. And a lot of people with whom I'm affiliated also share your concerns. Believe me, this is a real issue with people. In fact, I've been invited to, actually through Mr. Kramer, to consult with the folks over in Singapore. Now, Guy and I were going to go over there a few weeks ago, but we had to put that off due to these meetings that I referenced.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim, I've got the green light. Go ahead and do that. In the interim, I've sent you an email and mentioned some names in there. Everything that I've mentioned to you is not classified at the present time. Let's get right to the meat of the avian flu.
Yes.
With regard to what's posted, and if your listeners want to go to those links that...
For those who don't, this is radio. Why don't you either go ahead and read the email aloud now, or just give me the gist of it.
Okay, the gist of it, several weeks ago, a peregrine falcon was found within the continental United States, and the peregrine falcon was found to be carrying the avian flu, and it was dead. Now, there's some conjecture as to how the thing got here. Folks up at Plum Island think it may have come over the poles. Some other folks think it may have come in on a ship from Asia. Nobody knows.
Why did it not hit the press?
Well, I don't know about that.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the answer to that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not able to tell you where in the United States. I know it was somewhere in the east, and I know the folks I was meeting with had mentioned the location, and they also mentioned it wasn't classified.
Okay.
But
at that point.
And
at probably now, point, not at all.
Well, as of today, as of this morning, it's not. So
can I interject for a second?
Sure.
In the Vancouver area, about 6 months ago, they had to kill about 15 million birds up here because of the bird flu. And I don't know if that news got down to your area, but that falcon may be associated with that as well.
How many?
15 million.
There are outbreaks all over the country.
So,
in some places.
There's a lot of concern about a pandemic. You're using the word pandemic, and usually when something has not even quite manifested exactly yet, as in human-to-human transmission, I hope, they don't use words like that. This is a... It's like they know something we don't. They're calling this so far ahead of time. I've been reading stories about this now for months.
Well, I can't speak for the rest of the world, Art. I can only speak for the projects with which I'm associated. And that's the terminology being kicked around. That's the terminology being used.
You mentioned duck, geese, and said even say the hummingbird.
Well, those are possible modes of transmission. Any type of migratory fowl,
mm-hmm,
including those species that I reference in the note to you.
Could a bird really fly over the North Pole? Is that reasonable?
Absolutely.
It is?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Migratory fowl, that's mainly how we can account for deposition of different species in lakes and propagation of different fish species, et cetera, through the migratory fowl, the droppings.
So it's
so it figures if they drop fish eggs, they can drop spores.
So
that's a possibility.
It's their way of saying they think this is an isolated incident, one bird flying over the pole or one bird being carried in on a ship, and that's it. They're hoping.
Well, I think I agree with you. It may be an isolated incident, but I think we learned a lesson, valuable one, from a similar isolated incident where a young fellow came in on an airplane in the Middle East or in the Midwest, and AIDS got into the country. So it's a consideration. It's a lot of concern, and there are a lot of people looking at it right now, and the appropriate powers that be are taking steps to see that the United States is protected.
Do you happen to know any estimates of how deadly they think the this particular flu would be if it became contagious human to human? What percentage would die? I think the 1918 flu was about 30% or something like that.
I don't have that information in front of me, but the NIH probably has that data.
Right.
Your listeners could you know, easily find that data. I don't have it in front of me. I'm more from the mechanical side,
mm-hmm,
and the delivery systems end of dealing with it,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to the etiology and those statistics.
Anyway, you're saying that, again... To be clear here, folks, that a peregrine was found dead, tested positive for the bird flu, and that's news.
That's
serious,
correct
news. All right, thank you for
sure
not making me hang on to that because I wanted everybody to hear it.
Well, you left out an important part in the note that I sent you last night. You were talking about buttoning down and closing up. There's no need to do that. I think that's a little premature.
Oh, not yet. But what I said is, if I see this getting loose in a human-to-human mode, that would be my inclination, personally. You know, that's I have a wife who has asthma, can't afford to catch any kind of flu,
sure.
much less a cold. So
absolutely.
That would be button-down time for us. Okay, let's
right.
turn then to the subject that I really have you here tonight for. And I read your bios. Is that a sufficient background for you scientifically, or should we know more before we begin with HARP?
Are you talking to me?
Both of you, really.
That's enough for me. I think you've given out enough.
Guy?
Yeah, that should be sufficient.
Uh-huh. All right. Are you currently working for the King of Jordan?
I'll take that one first. Yes, we are. When I say we, Dr. Resnick is working on a few other items. We're working on vehicle and weapon camouflage for the country of Jordan through the military office of His Majesty. And, Joe, I'll let you answer the last half of that.
Okay. Actually, my involvement here is to facilitate complex technological transfers consistent with international treaty, and to facilitate military upgrades in the form of providing next-generation equipment.
Consistent with current treaties and current...
That's right. Are you reading from my script?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I didn't even print out your script.
No. Okay.
As I was saying, we don't operate with scripts here. You can't do this kind of talk show and have scripts.
Okay.
Although I find the reason that it had to be generated to be somewhat interesting, I mean, that was submitted to somebody at a senatorial level, I'm led to understand. Is that correct?
That's correct.
When we began the show, before we began the show, the only conversation you and I had, I picked up the phone, and you said, hey, Art, you've got a lot of friends in Washington.
Yes, you do.
You know, and what do you mean by that?
Well, the forum that you present here, as mentioned in some of the notes that I've sent along to Lisa, although some topics are somewhat outlandish, there is some degree of truth in some of the things that are advanced by some of your callers.
Yes.
And
that's exactly, by the way, surprisingly, how we designed the show, to be somewhat outlandish, but then again, to every now and then get to some gigantic truth.
Exactly.
And we do.
Well, there,
we do.
The people that I work with and people that I'm affiliated with recognize that, and that's good. They like you.
Huh.
So.
I hope that's true, and I hope that...
It is true.
Well, that's good. It really is sincerely true, then, huh?
I can only report historical information to you, Bart.
That's pretty recent history. Okay, so... They want some questions answered, or they want the public made aware to some degree of what HARP is about. It's a great mystery, this antenna array and transmitting facility in Alaska. And I guess, is it you, Guy, who corresponded with the DOD on the HARP topic?
Yeah, they had U.S. Naval Space Warfare Command. It initially contacted me about this invention of mine, the passive negative ion generator.
Uh-huh.
And just to give you a little bit of a rundown on that, it's not available in the United States. It's not FDA approved. It is Health Canada approved, which is our FDA equivalent. It is a small device that works off a material reaction. There are no batteries required, and it gives off enough negative ions to be biologically active in that it will, just by breathing in these negative ions that this passive negative ion generator is emitting, you can actually get the benefit that negative ion studies for years have shown that they can override the detrimental effect of positive ions out there.
Let me jump in here and give an example of negative ions.
Fire away.
In submarines, for example, a closed vessel or a closed container, if someone smokes a cigarette, mm-hmm. that gives off negative ions and floods the chamber. In much the same way, Guy, I apologize for using this analogy, but that's a very simplistic analogy, but accurate. It's like smoking, I would equate this to smoking a cigarette.
Cigarette smoke gives off positive ions. Negative ions are good, positive ions are bad.
Yes, and I believe that...
But through the decay...
Yes.
Through the decay in a closed container, the ions change the charges change.
Yes, they do.
And the smoke virtually drops to the bottom of the container, doesn't
it? That's right.
Is that correct? You see, I have a device exactly like that in my house. I've had one for years, so I know exactly what it is. Gentlemen, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guests are Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer. The main topic that we're going to be discussing this night, or we'll drag as much out as we can from these fellows, is HAARP. That thing in Alaska, that giant, giant. In fact, we've got a picture on the website of it. It's a very large antenna indeed. Take a look. I guess I would like to understand, with respect to both my guests, what their expertise is in the area of the HAARP project. By the way, everybody, it's High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. That's the name, H-A-A-R-P.
Let's get back to work here.
Yes. So your area of expertise individually, Dr. Resnick first.
Yes, sir.
What is your area of expertise, or where do you fit in with HAARP, Doctor?
Okay. Actually, I first became involved with HAARP, or heard the term the first time, back in 1983, during the Reagan years. There was some talk about establishing a new agency called DARPA, Defense Advanced Projects Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was developing some technologies with regard to microstructures, microcapsules, miniature heat exchangers, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
And I became involved at the behest of some contacts at NASA, where I was working on some other projects. And one thing led to another, and I got involved and did some work. And again, I didn't know what I was doing until about 10 years later. I happened to see some of these coatings that are taught in one of my U.S. patents, the patent 5523757, which is the stealth technology patents, and the patent 5163504. I think, Guy, you've posted those on the website so that the listeners can take a look at them.
What are those patents for?
The one has to do with miniature heat exchangers. For example, on a surface, that impacts a particular radio frequency, as a result of that impact, minute heat coefficients are generated.
Uh-huh.
In some instances, for example, in certain kinds of air platforms, that could cause peeling and flaking of certain reflective materials and adsorptive materials, such as RAM, radar attenuating materials, and resulting in exposure of the airframe or platform.
In other words, you could take a stealth aircraft and hit it with something and peel off the stealthiness, and suddenly it could be seen by radar. Did I translate that correctly?
Yeah, well, you're on the right page, but the significance of 504, patent 5163504, solved that problem. And in actuality, there was such a problem in 1989 when the Israeli radar picked up a signature of an F-117. And I actually came in and did a special initiative under the auspices of NASA to solve that problem. And that resulted in the issuance of the stealth technology patent.
What was Israeli radar doing that allowed them to see a 117?
Well, there are international. Actually, it was picked up at that time. We had some craft over in theater over there in preparation, and there are exchanges of military components. That's commonplace. That happens all the time.
Yes, yes. The question was, what did they do to be able to see a 117?
They hit it with 16.25 gigahertz. That's the general frequency. For example, if you're flying in a commercial aircraft, the fuselage of that air platform is being hit with 16.25.
Uh-huh. So you're saying they hit it with standard radar?
Standard radar, yeah.
And but they must have done something somewhat different, because normally a 117 isn't seen. So were they modulating in some different way?
No, what was happening is the binder material on the F-117s was peeling and flaking as a result of the impact and the impart of the 16.25.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Well, we solved the problem. The problem was solved. problem, and that's public domain. You can go and look at those patents, and that's public domain.
Hmm.
So that's essentially how, to get back to your question, how I first became affiliated with HARP, and I didn't see the technology again. That was after the U.S. Patent Office and I fought for about 6 years. As a matter of fact, 5523757 was in the 902 section for about 7 years. That had 153 claims. I think there are 23 permitted to issue. And that includes the license plates that we sell that defeat radar and X-band, K-band, that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
But that's how I first became aware. The first time I heard the term was in, I want to say, 1983, when Mr. Ray Guns, was in charge, and we used to laugh about that because we knew where certain initiatives we were working at that time were headed, and they had to do with the new DARPA situation. So that's how I became involved in this whole thing, and I didn't see the results of my work till many years later after it was declassified.
And how does your work, as you just described it, apply to HARP?
It has to do with the phased array antenna systems.
It has to do with the phased array antenna systems?
Yes, sir. Okay. Similar to the ones out your way, the ones that you have. that are propagating, you know, there's some guys up on Roadrunner Road, northeast of Pahrump there.
Uh-huh.
And they say that they're out of UNLV, and they're monitoring outputs that are causing some problems there at Bald Head Mountain. And they say that Art Bell is harping Bald Head Mountain.
Yeah. I do have, that's just a fine introduction. I do have 5 acres of antennas here.
I thought it was
a big antenna. And it consumes all 5 acres. Now, it's a big antenna. And I do a lot of low-frequency work, guys, in the area of 3 to 4 megahertz. 3 to 4 megahertz has been ultra reliable for amateur radio operators to talk to each other 200-400 miles away, NVIS type communications, near vertical incident stuff. And it's always been there. I've been a ham all my life, and since September of this year, within 1 hour of sunset, all that stuff is mysteriously gone every single night. It's very odd. Everybody I've talked to has never seen anything like it. I know darn well HARP is operating in around 2.3 as well as other frequencies, and I've got recordings of them, and I think they're affecting the ionosphere, or at least I think there's a good chance they're affecting the ionosphere. Now, high-frequency active auroral research program, that's what that means. That means they're doing something to the ionosphere, right?
Guy?
I would say since September we've had an unprecedented history of solar activity. Not every day, but have had. We're at the low point of the solar cycle, and we should not be having the solar flares that we're having.
It's true, but that listen to me. Doesn't cover it. It doesn't cover it. Yes, we've had a lot of solar activity, but at times when there's been no recorded solar activity, it's quiet. The KB index is down just about to the bottom. There's, in the green, no problems, and still it shuts down within an hour of sunset. Very unlike the 3 to 4 megahertz range. There's something different in the ionosphere. Now,
That could be a dust phenomenon.
A what phenomenon?
Ionospheric dust.
Ionospheric dust?
Ionospheric dust that creates a condition called marginal chaff. And that would have the capability to skirt your signal. I don't know. I'm just saying off the top of my head, that's one possibility.
We're just giving out alternatives to HARP. We're not saying it isn't HARP. We're just saying that there are some things that have gone on over the last couple of months that it could be.
Could be elephants marching across Montana, too.
Well, I'm not aware of any triangulation stations or anything out that way.
Mm. All right. So
if there were, I would know about it.
Yes.
I think I would know about it.
Uh-huh. So
I think Guy would be able to track that.
Oh, either one of you. What is the purpose of HARP? We've got its name. What is it supposed to do?
I would say primarily it's probably there for ballistic missile defense.
Really?
Heating up the ionosphere, charging it up, any ballistic missile coming through that that charged up ionosphere is essentially going to be fried. And I would say that's probably the primary purpose. Secondary purpose, which is probably used for more or less most of the time, is submarine communications. Stimulating the ionosphere so you get those extremely low-frequency waves that can penetrate the ocean floor.
Yes.
And I think that's public domain, that this was the primary reason that they were going to set it up. And the location in Alaska is the exact location that you want to be in the proximity to the ionosphere in the latitude-longitude there. Ground-penetrating radar, again, that's no secret, but they need to bounce it off the ionosphere, and you need something fairly close in order to penetrate. I mean, your adversary has to be within a certain range, and so Alaska wouldn't be my first choice for it if you were going to be looking at adversaries around the world.
Well, yes, ground-penetrating radar, I mean, that was one of the stated goals, that it could locate underground tunnels and bunkers or something of that sort, was said, right?
Mm-hmm. Guy has mentioned the militaristic aspects of this, and there are other aspects to HAARP that have intrinsic value. For example, in dealing with cellular and molecular consequences of the ELF, for example, through use of particular frequencies in ELF, you can cause plants to grow faster.
Say good and close to the telephone for me. You can cause plants to grow faster.
You can cause plants to grow faster. Certain insects, such as bees, can be stimulated to increase output. So there are some beneficial aspects, other than militaristic, certainly being examined through the HAARP initiative.
And crops to grow better?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Stimulation of extremely low frequencies might cause crops to grow faster.
That's right.
There's been studies, many studies done on vegetable growth, and they found that cucumbers will actually grow at twice their normal length in a positive ion environment.
Is a positive ion environment what's produced by HAARP after it bounces off the ionosphere?
Well, HAARP can go both ways. It can produce a negative ion ratio, heavy ion ratio around the globe, or it can produce a positive ion ratio. Now, we were just talking about bouncing something off the ionosphere and being within a certain range, but if you're changing the ion ratio, that's a global effect. That's going to affect everything from Alaska to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like an umbrella.
Yeah.
Yes. So, again, you know, you've given me some sort of light points of, gee, maybe some of the thought about benefits of HAARP. So you're saying that any ICBM coming through an area charged in the ionosphere by HAARP would be destroyed?
Could be.
Could be destroyed?
Yes.
Do we have any proof of that?
I think they have some strong proof, computer modeling and whatnot.
Really? You see, I didn't know that.
Oh, that's available in the public domain out there.
What is it coming through such a highly charged portion of the ionosphere that would kill an ICBM? Can you tell me?
Joe?
I think the electronic systems would be compromised.
Uh-huh.
Unless they were shielded. And, excuse me, in most cases these aren't shielded because they lack the requisite technology to accomplish the shielding. So
that is something. Would a single installation of HAARP, it perhaps would be effective against a single ICBM launch or even a couple, I suppose, but certainly no defense against all-out war.
I think it could be.
Oh.
You're not charging in this case, you wouldn't be charging a specific area, but the entire ionosphere.
The entire ionosphere?
Yes.
You're suggesting the entire ionosphere could be charged hard enough, high enough, well enough to destroy an ICBM or many of them coming through it?
Well, with 3 billion watts of energy at HAARP alone, and HAARP's not the only one up there.
Do you know the current status with regard to HAARP and power output? Where are they? Do you know?
I know they were getting close to that that 3 billion watts. Joe, do you?
It's on the website. If the reader or listeners would like to go to the website, HAARP is pretty good at keeping up data.
Gee, last I heard, they were around 1 billion watts. I didn't know they were so anywhere near 3 billion. Then, my God, that's a lot of power. Wow.
Your microwave oven produces 1,000 watts.
Yeah, thank you. That gives everybody some little idea of the scale of everything here. 1,000 watts compared to, what, 3 billion watts effective, I guess. That's Now, I've heard it said by some people that I've interviewed on the subject of HAARP that HAARP could literally burn a hole in the ionosphere. Is that an accurate analogy?
It could create a hole. Yeah,
I don't think burn is the right term.
No, yeah. It can create a hole in the ionosphere.
Create a hole in the ionosphere. And what effects, can you describe any effects that are attendant with that? If you pour that much energy into the ionosphere, in fact, right through it, what are you doing to the ionosphere? What do we know so far with regard to the experiments they've conducted so far about what happens around the ionosphere when you hit it that hard? Is it like a big bell that rings? Is it does it become suddenly very absorbent? What happens?
In the case of going through the ionosphere, I think you've already answered the question. It becomes absorbent. It's as if it's not even there at certain frequencies.
Yes.
It depends. Now, we need to define atmosphere. Are we talking, troposphere? Are we talking thermosphere? Are we talking altitudes of, 85 meters or kilometers? Or are we talking 600 kilometers?
Yes. Give me the altitudes. The ionosphere being what altitude roughly to what altitude roughly?
Zero to approximately 600 kilometers high. Then you reach into what they call the mesosphere, and then you hit the mesopause, and then the thermosphere. Then above that, you run into the mixed gases, hydrogen, nitrogen, those sorts of things that are out in the shallow space areas. So,
a lot of the work that they're doing with HAARP and HIPAS, which is a second auroral heater array, stands for High Power Auroral Stimulation.
Where is High Pass located?
High Pass is...
I guess Poker Flats, isn't it?
No, it's 288 kilometers southeast of HAARP. So it's not near Poker Flat there, and we'll get into Poker Flat in a minute. But they're basically...
Officially, everything's run out of Poker Flats, though.
Yes.
Is it? In other words, a remote operation?
Not necessarily. There's... in order to steer a signal,
yes,
which is spoken about all through the HAARP mandate and work leading up to it, you need three arrays in order to steer it. They only talk about two, HAARP and High Pass.
Uh-huh.
There's a better array that the DOD says was canceled, but if it was better, why was it canceled? And that is the FIPA array, and the FIPA array stands for... I can find it here. It is the, frequency independent phased array antenna.
All right. Hold it right there. We'll get right back. Three to steer it, huh? Three are needed to steer it. All right. Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are my guests. The subject is HAARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. Be right back. Subject HAARP. Guests, Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer. What I said a moment ago was a joke, kind of a joke, not really much of a joke, actually. Some very interesting things happened. Along came this new technology gentleman called BPL, Broadband Over Power Lines, way to get, the Internet into every American household through the power lines, and the FCC just about went into a cheering motion for the whole thing, and it went sailing through, and So I sort of jokingly said, maybe they went ahead and did that over the objections of hams. And well, you know something interesting about it? Not just the hams were objecting to it. In fact, we all thought that, the hams will write the objections, will be ignored. But you know what? The military, they'll come along. And in fact, they did in the beginning, and they wrote terrible objections to the whole concept of BPL. And then all of a sudden, mysteriously, they backtracked on themselves, and the military virtually withdrew their objections to a BPL. And I wonder why. In other words, could they have been told to withdraw their objections because there was something bigger going on? Could it be that they knew that HAARP was going to turn the shortwave bands into mush anyway? And you know, that was only a half a joke, because they're sort of turning into mush. Some of the frequencies that we use to operate aren't behaving normally. Gentlemen, is that HAARP?
Guy, I'll defer that to you.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be, huh? Might be. Well, you know, when you just think about it, guys, not just you, Guy, both of you, it's one of the stated goals, you know, to screw around with the ionosphere. Now, there's rumors of everything from, the way you guys painted it, it sounded like babies have rosy cheeks and frogs hopped around happily and crops grow, and my God, it's the best thing that ever happened.
Bees make more honey, too.
Yeah, and bees make more honey, that's right. And it's a wonderful world we live in, as HAARP rains down on us. Somehow, it just doesn't seem like Paul would be satisfied that he had the whole story if he just heard that.
Well, Guy and I had a little conversation while we were on break here.
Oh.
With regard to another positive aspect of HAARP, there are positive aspects. How would you like to throw your cell phone away? How would you like
I'd like to have them all blown to smithereens.
Yeah,
that's my personal opinion.
How would you like to be able to just drop two wires into the ground and pay a one-time fee for a telephone and talk to anybody anytime and never pay any more money? Wouldn't that be nice? Throw away the telephones. That's being looked at.
Sounds kind of like, I don't know, like a man who lived long ago invented, you know, electricity through the air and, you know.
Yeah, but I agree with you.
You do?
Sure. But you can't deny the existence of ELF.
No, I can't.
A system such as that would be based on ELF.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the reasons why certain people don't want people to go into that range.
This is all. This really sounds like Tesla stuff, doesn't it? I mean, it really
not at all.
No, really.
Well, I would disagree. I mean, the Russians had the Tesla towers back in the 80s, and the Tesla towers are just a baby version of the HAARP. Now the Tesla towers. In the late 80s, early 80s, we're producing something called the woodpecker signal over the ham radio band.
The Russians were doing that, actually, yes.
Yes.
Over the horizon radar.
Over the horizon, under the ground. If it's ELF, it's going under the ground as well.
So that was underground also?
Yes.
Okay, guys. Other than the birds chirping and rosy faces for little babies and all the positive stuff, some of us in the public, and I'm one of them, aside from what effect it, you admit, might be having on the shortwave bands, what else might it be doing?
Guy?
I mean, it's not all chirping birds. There's got to be concerns here. You heat up the ionosphere enough to burn up an ICBM or all ICBMs coming in.
Guys, this might be a good time to digress for a second and go back and talk about putting a hole in the ionosphere and doing an MBA.
Moon bounce.
Yes, here you go.
In 2001, the HAARP site had talked about doing moon bounces. And in the late 60s, the ham radio operators discovered that they could send a signal to the moon, bounce it off the moon, and hit the other side of the planet,
mm-hmm.
of Earth,
mm-hmm.
and essentially communicate with someone on the opposite side of the planet. Well, this, of course, couldn't take place until they started doing moon bounces.
Mm-hmm.
So HAARP tried this in 2001 and supposedly were successful at doing it. In order to do this, you need to put a hole in the ionosphere and send your signal through the hole.
So they bounced non-traditional frequencies, frequencies that would normally bounce off the ionosphere and or be absorbed by it. They bounced those kinds of frequencies off the moon?
Well, you have to blow a hole through the ionosphere first.
Yes.
And then send a secondary signal. So that would implicitly command a second system.
So they did that in 2001.
In 2001. And in order to do that, you have to steer the signal. And in order to steer the signal, you need three arrays.
You were alluding to that previously. The one that had been, you said, shut down, perhaps the best one of all. Is it really shut down, my listeners are
asking? Well, they were saying it was never built. But something's been built up there.
Well, Guy, this might be a good time to invite the listeners to take a look at that website and the fractalizations that...
Yes, the camouflage.
Yeah, I think you...
The website can be found. It's the first link on the superforce.com site.
For those of the listeners following this.
And on that page, we show how HARP can essentially be gone. It's still there, but it's under camouflage, and you wouldn't be able to tell if you were flying a plane 60 feet over it.
All right, so you're
much
saying...
Much like Roadrunner rode out your way.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that the installation... could be there and not there.
Probably within the Poker Flat region. According to the HARP information from the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy,
uh-huh.
It should have been built at the Poker Flat region, not
uh-huh.
in the area it is in Alaska.
Hmm.
But this is all conjecture. We're not sure. And those examples on the website, those are just illustrations and shouldn't be taken as gospel.
Okay. Dr. Nick Begich is somebody I've interviewed on the subject of HARP. He believes that there is a part of this technology that could be used, for example, aimed and used to mentally confuse troops on a battlefield. You could aim it at an enemy's troops before the war ever began and turn them into blithering idiots, basically. In other words, affect them biologically.
I don't know if you can turn them into blithering idiots, but you could be part of some kind of...
I exaggerate a little. But anyway, affect them mentally, profoundly.
At this point, I don't know if profoundly might be the capability that's there. I definitely believe that they could increase the positive ion ratios to overdose these people in positive ions, and that has a series of psychological... detrimental effects on people. It takes the fight out of soldiers.
Well,
it doesn't make them a bunch of blithering idiots, though.
Well, ELF, very low combinations of frequencies, though, have been shown, haven't they, to do very weird things to biology.
Joe?
I think that the listeners can go to a website, viewzone.com/harp.exec.html, and get that answer.
Huh. I bet 1 in 100 got that.
I think that's on our website.
It is linked?
I think that's on our website.
That's on the website. Viewzone.com, HARP, exec.html. That gives you all the frequency ranges. And anybody that knows about physiology, you can make your own determinations with regard to impact.
Okay, I was also told that HARP is doing some interesting things in terms of the way it affects the ionosphere, that they send audio tones, perhaps two tones, let us imagine, that beat together. And then the sum and the difference of that beat are also produced. And in that way, they're able to get to such an ultra-low frequency that they can begin to cause some sort of domino kind of effect in the ionosphere. Is this something you can talk about?
I don't recognize that to be factual in as much as those frequency ranges are between 70 and 150 hertz in ELF. So combination of those frequencies or stimulation would not in itself cause anything audible in that we hear between 400 and 800 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what you're talking about would emanate... we wouldn't be able to hear it. Our human physiology just can't. We can't hear that.
But again, it could have an effect on biological things. I mean, ELF in certain ways does, right?
Absolutely. I would agree that it, perhaps the intercellular fluid, for example, and if the person had eaten, for example, a high sodium content that day, well, it's common knowledge that the different elements found on the periodic table respond and couple and yield in different frequency ranges. Now, theoretically, if a person had eaten a lot of salt or had a pizza and was impacted somewhere between 70 to 150 hertz ELF, okay, it might cause something, but we don't know what.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't seen anything to lead me to believe that something like that is taking place. I haven't seen it.
How large can we describe HARP's influence in? Is there a way to put a size to it, how big its influence is?
It depends on the use. If it's to increase the global ion ratios, then it's a global influence. If it's to target a certain area, it probably has a limited target area.
I can speak from the bureaucratic end. There's about 16 or 17 different agencies with their hands in HARP and authorized by Congress.
Huh.
So it's pretty big. Everybody's got their hand in it.
That's politically big, yeah.
Yeah, it's big.
Okay. Here's a question that was suggested I ask, and I'll just pick it out because how can I not ask it? Can HARP create a nuclear-sized explosion without radiation? Now, I can't even believe that you sent that to be asked. Can it?
There is a patent that the company actually that designed HARP holds. That patent number is listed on that link on our website that we discussed.
Yes.
And HARP itself likely has some things it can do that we're not fully aware of yet. There is a link on the website that shows what a grape cut in half placed in a microwave oven of 1,000 watts gives off basically ball lightning. And it'll give off maybe 15 large pulses of ball lightning. Now, if you multiply that by 3 million times, you have HARP. And we show on there that you just need a larger grape in order to produce this.
God.
So the patent itself actually alludes to putting a source such as methane in it, a region, and then triggering it. And one of the last diagrams actually talks about floating a blimp of some sort in the atmosphere and then triggering it with two arrays. And this triggering effect would actually create a nuclear-sized explosion without radiation.
And
with a moon bounce...
Methane, now. You said methane, right?
Yes.
And you could produce an explosion equivalent to an atomic weapon without the radiation?
Yes.
Using HARP as the triggering mechanism, setting it off?
Well, they could use different arrays, but HARP, likely because the company's the one that designed HARP, the HARP array, was looking at the use of HARP for that end result.
Jeez, you guys are scaring me. I didn't think I'd get this kind of information from you.
There's nothing to be scared of.
Oh?
No, absolutely not.
No.
It's all theoretical.
Learn to love the bomb, right? You know, Mark, in Juneau, Alaska, I get questions on my computer as we go. You know, these are very curious people. He says, hey, Art, if HARP can fry an ICBM, what would it do to a reentering space shuttle?
Probably do the same thing if they had it set up to do such a thing, but why would they?
Yeah.
Right. Why would they? Indeed. So you guys theorize that the third HARP, the third finger of HARP, is in fact existing, but you can't see it. You believe that? In other words, you need three, you're telling me, for the steerage we've been talking about. So,
yes.
So
yeah.
You pretty well believe this third one does exist?
And I defer that question to a guy.
I would say the third one is probably the most powerful out of the three. HARP is the disinformation. That's the location they want you to think that the key source is.
What about commercial airliners? Are they flying at an altitude where commercial airline passengers wouldn't have anything to worry about, or do they?
No. We're talking about altitudes of 150 kilometers.
Mm-hmm. Did HAARP come into use after 9/11?
There looks to be possible evidence that it may have been used a week after 9/11. Now, everyone in the shortwave community knows that HAARP was actually activated immediately after 9/11. Now, this would have been probably a defense DEFCON-type situation where they didn't know who was attacking the states. It may have been that missile defense side that they would have started up to be prepared.
So, in other words, somebody pushed the panic button and said, look, if HAARP has the ability to do whatever, and I guess you're not prepared to tell me what that is other than the ICBM protection?
Let me jump in here just for a second. I'd have to disagree with that school of thought in that the HAARP system facilities are using gas-fired circuit breakers in locations, and they use a system of emergency generators that are triggered every 72 hours. So it's very possible that what happened during that time period. Now, keep in mind, I've been told by the AO, which action officer up at Greeley, they've got about 85 of those up there. And throughout that whole system, through Poker Flats, through Greeley, there may be as many as 200 of those that are on a cycle. So those cycle every 72 hours. It's possible somebody had a switch open, hit an accidental fire test shot. That was interpreted as HAARP being activated. So, you know, it was probably that 72 cycle. You have 200 or 300 of these generators going off. I would attribute it to that.
It was a series of strange solar storms, or I should say geomagnetic storms that we had without a solar storm.
Right.
The week after 9/11, when the stock market was falling, and U.S. Naval Space Warfare Command was following my research for the previous year, where we were showing the stock market.
They follow
market.
Everybody's research, Guy.
They do, yes. But the stock markets tend to fluctuate with natural ion ratios. And they were well aware that we were showing this correlation on our website.
I would tend to support that that theory rather than HAARP having some influence.
Really?
I would.
Is HAARP being used to for the purpose of some kind of mind control? That's a flat-out question to which I honestly don't expect a flat-out answer, but I'll try. Is it mind control?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that I'm aware of, other than positive ion overdose. And, again, that would be a negligible effect. We're not talking about blithering people.
Yeah, blithering idiots.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the fact that HAARP can trigger a nuclear-sized explosion without the radiation is a new one on me. And also, gentlemen, there's been some recent sightings of red skies, red parts of the upper atmosphere that scientists can't explain. Anyway, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Being in the darkness, Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are my guests. The subject is HAARP. They're both well-credentialed to be discussing it. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you, Art. Pleasure to be back.
I want to ask you the, hey, just push the button, Frank, and let's see what happens question. Surely at the beginning, I don't know where we are with knowledge about what HAARP has or hasn't accomplished in the ionosphere, how far along we are, but at some point, or perhaps still at a point yet to come with HAARP, there is going to come this moment where there's something incredible they can try, and absolutely, honestly, they might have some idea of what might happen, but in science, a lot of times, to be honest, you really get an unexpected result. And so you don't always know what's going to happen. Well, like when we exploded the first atomic bomb, there was a significant line of thought, scientifically, quite mainstream line of thought, that thought the entire atmosphere might chain react and ignite, burning us all up. And yet they pushed the button. And so with HAARP, as the button choices come along, I just wonder how careful the two of you feel the button pushers are being.
I think they're being very prudent with their experimentation and looking at the results before they go to the next step.
I'm sorry, who was that? Who answered?
That was Guy.
That was Guy.
I would have to agree with that. A lot of effort, a lot of different agencies are involved in this project. There's a lot of policing.
Yes.
If you just go to any one of the websites, and you'll see how many agencies, and they're all under federal mandate.
The project in its early days, it just didn't seem as though it was particularly military at all, and then it suddenly became very military, didn't it?
Joe?
Who wants that?
Guy?
I think it would, the purpose from the start was probably military, and...
You do?
Oh, I certainly do.
And, how refreshing.
And I think that the educational side of it is just that. It's only a side. And the military knew that they likely couldn't hide their involvement in this and eventually opened it up. And that's when everyone kind of found out that there was more to it than just university research.
I see. I believe these two questions go to you, Guy, because I don't think Dr. Resnick wants them. Was HAARP used in Afghanistan?
No, but I was sharing information on our natural line ratio algorithm with the U.S. government, or I should say U.S. military branches, and just kind of showing them when the mass surrenders were taking place. And they were all taking place on the same type of polarity when the ions were the same way.
Hmm.
And that information was likely used down the road.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Resnick, do you think that this particular ion fortuitous combination was an accident?
I would have to defer that to Guy.
I see. Guy, was Iraq a target of HAARP?
It's possible. We knew that moon bounces were possible after 2001.
Uh-huh.
We had shared information with them on the types of days when troops were surrendering, and before the troops moved into Baghdad, HAARP was active for the precise time that the moon was mutually visible between Baghdad and HAARP in Alaska.
Clear implication being they bounced a signal off the moon.
Yes.
And so that would be, with respect to Iraq, the answer to that would be a yes, it was used?
I mean, we can only guess that that's what they might be doing.
That's right. I'd say, Guy, you'll have to admit that's somewhat speculative, in that the hard data that I've seen in the sites and the fact that you've come forward with this information to the NWC ops, it's total speculation at this point. There's no hard data.
Is it all speculation for you, Doctor?
Well, Art, let me be frank with you.
Please.
I'm a scientist. If I can't cut it, weigh it, or put it under a microscope,
it ain't
or
so.
Run it through one of my machines,
mm-hmm.
I'm real doubtful of it.
And that's the problem with HAARP, is we don't
In this case,
know.
I'm from Missouri.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You've got to show me.
One other speculative thing that a lot of people have been saying about HAARP is weather control. The control of the weather, our weather, hurricanes, perhaps large forces of weather, or perhaps things much more mundane, you know, like putting low pressure systems.
Guy, I think that's Iowa.
I beg pardon?
He's referring to a new technology that the U.S. government has approved for use in, where is it, Texas now?
I believe it is.
Iowa?
Texas-based. It's a Russian technology.
Is it now? And what is that?
I'll defer that to Guy.
Ionization of the local atmosphere. It is a rainmaking device from Russia.
Dr. Resnick?
Yes, sir.
If you ever have to testify in front of Congress, be sure and take Guy with you.
I have testified in front of Congress numerous times.
Was Guy there for you?
No, Guy wasn't there. I testified in front of
go ahead,
Honorable
Guy.
Helen Bentley.
Yes, go ahead, Guy. I'm sorry.
It is a from a Russian technology that they have used for a number of years down in the United Arab Emirates to increase rainfall by, they're saying, between 15 and 300%.
Increase rain between 15 and 300%.
Yes, and what they're doing with this technology is they're basically flipping the polarity of the ions in the atmosphere to force rain to come out of any kind of clouds that might be present.
Do you know how they're achieving that? I mean, flipping it with what?
With antenna arrays. In the case of HAARP, they're bouncing something off the ionosphere. In the case of this IOLA technology, they're affecting all the ions within the air that we breathe down at our level and cloud level.
Okay, so are you both saying that as far as HARP is concerned, weather control is not an objective?
I wouldn't say that. If it's possible, it's probably way down on their priority list.
I'd have to say the jury's still out on that.
Okay. And then one more here. Was HARP used prior... this is a killer. Was it used prior to the 2004 U.S. federal election?
It was turned on the day of the election, but that doesn't mean that that's what it was used for.
I think that what happened was, if I can draw back to Fort Greeley and up there at Poker Flats, they have a system of machines up there that constantly reset and activate. That's probably what happened.
Now, several times, Doctor, you have suggested that perhaps there was an accidental lighting up of HARP at a otherwise controversial moment.
No. You misinterpreted what I said. There may have been a switch left on somewhere.
I see. A switch,
that caused a spike in an energy grid or a gradient that someone may have misinterpreted as a an activation of a potential HARP system.
I see. I promised, I think it was a young lady, that I would ask this, so it bears asking. Could HARP possibly affect tectonic plates?
Go ahead, Joe.
Guy and I discussed that. My opinion, no. I think that something else was responsible, and I did listen to that that query as it came in, and I certainly appreciate that person's concern. In fact, she should probably contact us. I thought it was a boy. I'm not sure, but
could have been a young man. Yeah.
Could have been. I thought it was a young man. That young man should contact us at the NA2TDC because he said the magic words. He did the math. Our people have done some modeling too, and we found that the modeling and the math just doesn't obtain. So it wouldn't have been possible for ELF to impact that tectonic plate to cause that tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
I would totally concur with Joe on that.
Okay. What are the range of the unknowns with HARP? In other words, what possible things could come of HARP that might be, A, unexpected, and B, in some way detrimental to the people living here on the planet?
Well, I'd like to jump in here just for a second. One hopeful outcome of HARP is to make the world happier.
Happier.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. If, in fact, the system does exist, which undoubtedly HARP classification nomenclature has been designated and stated, one of the objectives could be to make people happy.
Happy.
And Guy, I think maybe you should mention the request you had from a police office. Over the last couple of days,
The path of
for
the
your eye on generator. Yeah, go ahead. I think that would be good.
Well, the path of negative ion generator can override any of these detrimental effects that HARP is possibly capable of putting out by changing ion ratios out there, and to a certain degree, I mean we're not producing power outputs that a plug-in generator can do, but it is something that can help anyways.
So the bottom line is, if there is a HARP, you can get one of these ion generators from Guy and turn it on. Don't worry about it.
All right. Now, I know something about these because, as I mentioned, I have one in my home. And, they take care of dust particles and smoke and things like that. But I don't consider them, I didn't consider them as a defense, in quotes, against HARP or something like that.
Well, I think that your view of HARP in terms of its output potentials over broad spectrum is misguided, is misinformed.
Is it?
It's Guy, could you help me here a little bit and explain this to the minimal with regard to the minimal effects of the phenomenon?
Mm.
On the positive ion effects?
That's correct.
Okay, I'll give you a list of side effects from positive ion winds, such as the Chinook wind in Calgary or the Santa Ana wind down in Southern California.
Yeah, but this is only with respect to ion polarization. That's all. I mean, there's more to HARP than that, right?
There is, but listen to the list of side effects here. Body pains, sick headaches, dizziness, twitching in the eyes, nausea, fatigue, faintness, disorders in salt, water accumulation, respiratory difficulties, allergies, asthma, heart attacks, circulatory disorders.
Yes.
Psychological side effects, emotional imbalance, irritation, vital disinclination, compulsion to meditate, exhaustion, apathy, disinclination or listlessness towards work, and on it goes. Suicide rates go up by 20%. Heart attacks go up by 50% when these positive mind winds blow through in certain regions of the globe. And these are natural.
Who documents that?
That was done by the Swiss Meteorological Institute in 1974.
Wow.
These types of winds are typical and have been around since the times of Alexander the Great. People have been getting headaches and things. Mm-hmm. That's a natural occurrence.
Mm-hmm. And it can be scientifically correlated to this atmospheric phenomena.
Yes. In over 5,000 studies, they've documented the same thing over and over again. Even the FAA had shown that air traffic control towers were low in negative ion ratios. And if the level drops below 500 ions per cubic centimeter, mm-hmm. and normally you're dealing with about 500 to 3,000 on an average indoor environment.
Same thing with submarine crews.
And yes. And every submarine since, I think, 1956 has had negative ion generators put on them, and every bridge of every U.S. Navy ship has negative ion generators put on there as well.
Hmm.
And the reason for that is to keep the crews alert and awake at nighttime. The submarines are a little different story. In a closed environment, you have to have something like that to pull the oils out of the air.
Still,
laminar air flows.
Still, all said, though, really, gentlemen, it's still a kind of marginal effect that you're talking about. Whereas when we're talking about the full effect of HAARP, there have been some claims made that would extend way past a sort of marginal effect.
I think what you're talking about is the potential to weaponize.
Yes, sir.
Such a system.
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
Well, weaponize. There's a potential or to weaponize just about anything. I don't think that's the goal.
No.
Of HAARP,
no.
Or any of the other affiliated programs.
Well, certainly.
At least not what I've seen.
Certainly an ICBM defense would be considered a weaponization of sorts.
Well, actually, that's a countermeasure.
It's
a countermeasure. That's not a weapon.
Well,
there's a difference between ECMs and CMs.
Yeah, but that's the argument that Ronald Reagan made, that difference,
God bless him.
Right?
Good president. Best years of my life. God bless him.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Fort Greeley.
Okay.
Fort Greeley is right in the middle of HAARP and High Pass and Poker Flat. And just about everyone out there knows that it's not the official reason for it being there is a ballistic missile defense of the continental United States. And just about everyone knows that it's not there for that. It's there to protect HAARP, High Pass, and this potential FEPA system that's up there.
Hmm.
Those are your primary missile defense systems. And if anything comes in under that umbrella, Fort Greeley's there to stop it. Fort Greeley is the phalanx system for HAARP.
Has there been an actual test? I mean, anti-ballistic missile systems that we have been tested with some degree of failure and some degree of luck in anti-CBM type things. So I would think that if you're making the claim that HAARP is a defense against ICBMs, they would have tested that. Have they?
Oh, I believe they've probably done that without anyone's knowledge. It wouldn't be a difficult thing to do.
The only testing I'm aware of has taken place in cooperation with White Sands and some activity down at Kwajalein, on the Kwajalein Atoll. But
well, if we had an effective ICBM defense, courtesy of HAARP, then why do we need to continue trying to perfect anti-ballistic missiles?
Because there's a new missile that the Russians have designed that basically goes up and makes a 90-degree turn and flies in under the ionosphere. It's a ballistic missile,
oh.
But it doesn't actually go ballistic. It doesn't go outside the ionosphere and back in again.
Oh, really?
And the only way to stop that would be a low-level nuke.
Yeah.
Knockout. But if we use a low-level nuke, that knocks out all the communications in the northern hemisphere.
Yes.
So that's verboten. Can't do that. Unless you have a backup system like ELF.
Well, some of us would complain that communication is being knocked out by HAARP anyway, right now.
I haven't seen any data to that effect, Art.
Probably not.
I haven't seen it.
I just bet you haven't.
No, I haven't seen it.
Uh-huh. Well, something certainly is affecting the ionosphere, and it's one of the HAARP stated goals.
Guy and I talked about that but just before we went to break.
Yes.
And you had mentioned something about the red skies. Guy, let's go into that area.
Well, I mentioned a story I had about the Columbia crew prior to their burning up in the atmosphere, having actually captured on video one particular frame of a portion, a big portion of our sky lighting up red, not associated with a sprite or an elf or anything like that. This was some new phenomena.
Guy,
of the atmosphere just turning red. Hello?
Yes, I think your guest last night who had told you, but I think that's where you found out about it.
No, I have this. I have the story.
Okay, someone had gone onto my website because I had posted this up last week on the Superforce site on our paper that refers to the space shuttle and the Columbia accident. And we had a couple of years ago theorized that because the shuttle was flying through from dusk to dawn, or the dusk to dawn current sheet, meaning we had the shuttle flying from darkness into daylight, at about that time, it started to experience the major problems. Now, I'm not saying that a hole in the wing from liftoff wasn't the damage, but definitely there looks to be a different problem there, and we had theorized that it could have been one of these high-altitude lightning sources. Well,
all right.
Columbia Accident Investigation Board looked at this and said, we've never seen this event ever in any of the materials we've ever looked at, having a high-altitude lightning charge without a thundercloud present.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, the same shuttle mission that crashed captured this Tiger event, which is high-altitude lightning.
Yes, for the record, by the way, Guy, NewScientist.com published 19 January 2005 headline, Columbia crew saw new atmospheric phenomena. Gentlemen,
yep.
It's always a bit of a challenge to get callers on with two guests at once, but we'll give it a try here. Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are here, both well-credentialed to be speaking about HARP, and we've been doing a lot of that, lots and lots and lots of questions about HARP. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you, Art. Pleasure to be back.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. Bill in Knoxville, Tennessee asks straight out, do chemtrails have anything to do with HARP? You know, you both know if you've listened to this program at all what chemtrails are allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
They're particles dispersed by aircraft one way or the other. To your knowledge, is there any interaction, either real or theoretical, between HARP and these particles?
I don't even know if there's such a thing as chemtrails myself, other than the exhaust effluents that come off the back of engines, and I studied that for years myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I would give it a big no. That even if there was, I wouldn't think that HARP would require anything to get where it needs to get.
The theory being, I guess, that HARP would be able to radiate hard enough to have an interaction with these chemicals, whatever they are. And so that was, I guess, the spirit of the question, whether there were any chemicals being dispersed to interact with HARP.
I'd like to answer that, speak to that, if I may.
You may.
First, I'd like to say hi to Bill in Knoxville and that Knox rocks. And finally, absolutely not. HARP would have no impact on that I'm aware of. Couldn't. Frequency ranges are all wrong.
Uh-huh. Is there anything so potentially dangerous, or in fact dangerous, about HARP that either one of you are aware of, that in your mind you believe it should be banned?
Not HARP itself.
Now that's a qualifier, if I ever heard one. So.
I would say these rainmaking devices, because they're operating at surface level, and because people are so influenced by different ion ratios, that those themselves should be banned. That's an area I think we're playing with that we don't want to know the outcome of that. We don't want to do the research with working devices out there on a general population where this stuff hasn't really been tested before. In the case of HARP, it's a required defense tool. Nowadays, you have to have it. And before 9/11, my view on something like HARP was quite different. My view has changed now.
I see.
Let's digress for a second. You touched on Iola, again, the rainmaking thing.
Yes.
I had some experience and have someone in my association who had defected from the Soviet Union. And he knew we had a conversation about the Iola and rainmaking. To sum it all up, his response was he rolled up his sleeve, asked me if I wanted to buy a Rolex. So I got his point.
Yeah.
I got his point.
Yeah. Okay. In fact...
So I think that, you know, to assuage some of guys' concerns and listeners' concerns, I would have to disagree with the fundamental fear that Guy feels in this matter. I don't think it's a reality.
Okay. So nothing that either one of you are aware of that in your mind should have HARP disassembled and never fooled with again, banned?
No, it should be operational.
Absolutely.
It should be operational, but there was some kind of butt in there somewhere.
Not for me.
No, it sounded like a sort of qualified. Okay. So HARP's just spiffy, huh?
When you're on the right side of the fence, you wouldn't want to be an adversary.
No. You definitely don't want to be on the wrong side of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, it's things like that make it sound like a weapon. You know, that's like being on the wrong side of a 50 caliber machine gun. You don't want to be on the wrong side of that either, and for the same reasons, right?
Let me get philosophical here, if I may.
Okay, sure, why not?
Americans are not we're not an aggressive lot. We're a friendly lot.
Oh.
But if you put us in a corner, and if we had to use something like this, if something like HARP existed or one of the other systems existed, then you'd use it. End of story. That's not to say it exists, but if we had to use something like this, and if it didn't exist, we would bring it into existence, and it would exist, and we'd use it, probably.
That's pretty philosophical,
aren't you? And it's theoretical.
What was your comment about the sledgehammer there, Joe?
All right. I'm going to let some of the audience ask questions. That would be all right.
Sure.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Resnick. Hello. Hello there, Wildcard Line. Are you there?
Yes, I have a question for the good doctor.
Okay, go ahead and yell into the phone.
Okay, I will. I'm running the internet right now at the same time.
Oh, well, just concentrate on this.
Okay. The doctor may not be able to answer this question, but maybe your other speaker will. The HARP project, and from what you've been saying, if I understand you right, blows holes through the ionosphere.
Yes.
Me being a student of earth science and also an electrician, I've read quite a bit about the high-energy laser that's located in New Mexico, and you happened to just mention New Mexico, and I'm actually wondering, although it's maybe classified, if punching those holes in there would allow that high-energy laser to zap geosynchronous satellites, and I've never heard that question raised before.
Well, now it has been. Thank you very much. Boys, that's what happens when we try this. It does something really weird to the phones.
I'm sure I heard that.
That's really strange.
Came in and came out.
But he...
Probably harped us.
Okay, so what do you say to that? Is there a classified angle to that and you can't talk about it?
Well, I can speak to the laser in New Mexico. The laser is completely experimental in nature, and that's part of another initiative that is in the public domain, by the way, that's used to track potential penetrations into the atmosphere with regard to biologicals, that sort of thing.
Huh.
And imagine if there's a similar system in D.C. that goes out about 300 miles. It's constantly, in fact, it's right near the Jefferson Memorial.
And what does it do?
It constantly scans the skies for intrusions such as biologicals, those sorts of things. And I don't think that kind of laser, particularly with regard to the caller mentioned in New Mexico, that's not the purpose. That's not an offensive weapon. That's a monitoring system.
Huh.
And getting a laser through the ionosphere, I mean, there was that shuttle experiment years ago where they beamed the laser onto the cockpit window of the shuttle.
Let me digress just for a second, Art, with regard to the caller's inquiry and that laser system. In last month's issue of National Defense Magazine, it's put out by the NDIA, which I'm a life member, by the way, there's a nice article in there that talks about the defense system over D.C. that uses that exact same system. So and go to NDIA's website, ndia.org, and do a little homework, and you can find out more about that. It's nothing. It's not an offensive weapon. It's a defensive mechanism.
A defensive weapon.
No, it's not a weapon. It's a mechanism. It's defense.
Hey, it was your word.
It's an observation tool.
Yeah,
let's qualify that.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hello.
Everybody calls me Joe, Art.
Okay.
All right.
Hi. Where are you calling from, sir? Ma'am, whoever.
Bob.
Bob, and where are you, Bob?
Mansfield, Ohio.
I beg your pardon?
Mansfield, Ohio.
Okay. You have a question.
A question is that if you have a dissociation or incomplete combustion of gases in the upper atmosphere, this could result in solid carbon atoms, which when they're dispersed would just be a colloidal dispersion. But if the HARP were to ionize that region, it would cause them, just like in a liquid, to flocculate and come down as strings or large twisted strings of carbon. And this would be evidenced as a increase in precipitation like on the West Coast or the East Coast this week.
Affecting the weather, you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. That's with the assumption that the output of the HARP system was outputting at a particular frequency that could enable such a phenomenon to present itself. I don't think that's possible.
You don't?
No, sir. I don't think it's possible.
And
the frequencies, Guy, I don't think the frequency is high enough to do that. With my understanding of the hydrocarbon and carboxyl chains and the composition, even as the caller points out, marginal combustion had not taken place. What he's alluding to is the trails and possible contrails and excitation.
Yes.
That the same call, the former caller had queried. That's the same incident. You're not able to, with this marginal HARP system, output frequency levels enough to cause an excitation to combust that those particulates.
Once again, though, what I had heard is that they're using combinations of very low frequencies, and then, of course, you're left with, we all know, the sum and the difference of those frequencies when they beat against each other to achieve a frequency that otherwise would never be prolific at that point in the ionosphere.
Mark, one of my areas of expertise has to do with EMF, electromotive force weaponry and emitter systems.
Yes, sir.
And in 25 years, I have not seen or been able to reduce to practice in any of the laboratories that I've been in multiple phases within the ELF spectrum. Now, it's not to say someone else is not doing it. If they're doing it, I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably possible.
How compartmentalized is the whole HARP project?
Let me speak to this guy, if I might, just for a minute. Guy has some insights into this, too. I've mentioned a number of times the various agencies. At my last count, there were 13 agencies involved in this. So it's compartmentalized. For example, years ago I was working on a project, and I think I talked about this earlier. By the time I realized what I was doing, it was already
done
and declassified, and it was like the Oldsmobile.
Right.
So, you know, if it is something happened, if it does exist now, in 10 years, it's, you know, you'll find it in Kmart. The way it happens.
Yes. So we're only left to guess about where they actually might be today, what they're actually doing. If you could wipe away all the compartmentalization and get to the very core of what HARP is up to on all fronts, we're just guessing, right?
Oh, definitely. The only thing that we can pick up is shortwave radio to find out when it's turned on and when it's turned off.
Oh, and we can sure do that.
Yeah.
Have you gentlemen, you know, I just don't know where you are with respect to the HARP project itself. In other words, are either one of you, for example, involved in the ongoing current HARP project?
I mentioned earlier, the limit of my involvement rests in the two patents that are in the public domain.
Okay, so that's saying you have no current involvement, or your current involvement is limited to those.
I have no knowledge of anything other than what's in the public domain. I wish I did. If I did, I would certainly interject that into the conversation.
I don't know about that. if it was in the public domain, perhaps, but you're having to be very careful here. So are you having, if, let's try it this way. If you were involved in the current HARP project, would you be able to say so?
Yes. I think we're all involved in the HARP project, in a sense, in that our tax dollars support such efforts.
Uh-huh. Just in case you never have, here is one example, or I'm going to try to provide one example in a moment of HARP. I've got it here somewhere. Maybe I can't. Maybe I can find it. Maybe I can't. I don't know. But if I can find it, I'll play it for you, gentlemen.
Okay.
Have you ever heard HARP?
I've heard it.
You've heard it?
Yeah. I pick it up on shortwave all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's because it's up there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is the current schedule of HARP transmissions published?
The current schedule doesn't mean anything with...
You can go to the website and...
Wait a minute. I want to follow up on what Guy said. The current schedule, you just said, doesn't mean anything. Isn't that what you said?
Well, I mean, if they're using it 24 hours a day for reasons of submarine communication, it's going to be going 24 hours a day on certain frequencies.
That's a good point.
Don't forget the oxygen cycles, too. You have oxygen cycles up there every 72 hours, so... You never know.
Hmm. Is there any reason for the American people to fear anything at all that HARP does, ever?
My first response would be no.
No, huh?
My first response would be ever's a long time. Presently, I see no problem. At least what I'm exposed to.
And at these power levels, at three, they're really at, you know for sure, they're at the 3 billion watt level?
No, we don't know that for certain, but
I
had heard that they were up to or getting very close to full capacity.
Uh-huh.
That's reported on the website. That's all a matter of public record.
All right, very good. Let us continue with the public. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Ann in New Mexico,
hello.
KOB.
Yes, Ann.
An interesting conversation.
What really blew
me away was that the site in Alaska is basically disinformation, quote-unquote, and it's steerage. Now, Art, remember you interviewed Will Thomas about a year ago?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And he mentioned that the whole facility was sold to BAE Systems, which in turn is owned by Rokar International out of Jerusalem, Israel. Do you suppose the steerage is coming out of there? And also, are they trying to open portals?
Well, there's a wild one. Open portals.
You mean time portals?
Yeah, I think something like that. Time portals or dimensional portals or something like that.
You know, that's an interesting question. I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay.
But I'm not, on the other hand...
That's an interesting answer.
On the other hand, let's not discount that possibility.
Oh?
I wouldn't discount that possibility.
Then I'll discount it.
Okay, one discount, one non-discount, and one international line
well,
on the air.
Guy, then let me offer a touche, because I've discounted you a few times tonight. Yeah.
The Israeli connection, I'd heard in the grapevine that Israel had a secret heater array, but I've heard no follow-up, no confirmation on that, and I have no knowledge that HARP is in any way, shape, or form being used or run by the Israelis.
All right, very quickly, international line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art. This is Ed calling from Bermuda.
Yes, Bermuda.
Yeah, man. It's real nice out here. I got a little fishing boat that I have out here and take tourists out and try to make a little living here.
Well, great to hear from Bermuda. We don't frequently hear from Bermuda, so great. Ask a quick question because we're...
Okay, I was curious how this place that supposedly does not exist, how do they camouflage it where you cannot see it from 60 feet up. I just can't understand that.
All right. Maybe the answer will help you out. Gentlemen?
Guy?
Fractal camouflage. Feedback loop.
Fractal camouflage. Feedback.
Yes. Fractal basically is a design that simulates itself in different scales. And so from far away, you'll get the same scale as you will close up. And in the case of the camouflage that we've been working on for the Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management,
yes,
we are using these fractals.
All right. Gentlemen, hold on. Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick, and we've been talking about some pretty exotic stuff. HARP. All right. This is a straight-out question to both Dr. Resnick and Guy. Gentlemen, would you, if you thought it was the patriotic thing to do, give out disinformation?
I'd have to say yes if the opportunity, if I felt it was, if it was a necessity.
And that is Dr. Resnick saying that?
Art, let me put it to you this way. I can report only historical information. I'm in the business of factual.
Yeah, I know.
If I can't weigh it, cut it, or slice it, then I'm real suspect of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm the kind of guy, I may BS you a little bit, but I never tell you a lie. And what I tell you, take it to the bank.
I need to add to that I am a Canadian citizen. And when we say patriotic, I'm talking about Canada.
Well, okay. That's
maybe if you posed the question a little differently.
I thought it was posed just fine. If you thought that it was a patriotic thing to do, would you give out disinformation? Very straightforward.
No, sir, I would not.
And that's a good straightforward answer. Okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Resnick and Guy Kramer. Hello.
Yes, my name is Josh.
Hey, Josh.
I used to operate a phased array radar, and I wanted to know the definition of phased array.
Okay. Anybody want to tackle the definition of phased array?
Guy.
No, go ahead, Joe.
Okay. Phased array, you have an array of antenna. You want a technical definition, or do you want a drawing?
I think drawing wouldn't be possible. This is radio.
Well, so the best way, go to... Best thing to do, go to the internet.
Uh-huh.
Look it all up.
Can you give us an audio description of what a phased array is?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Phased array is a system that works in conjunction with multiple array antenna, such as the ones at Poker Flats. Some of them operate in the various frequency ranges at 70 to 150. What else do you want to know?
Okay, so it's a multiple antenna array phased together for a specific purpose. Now, it's our understanding that the purpose in the case of HARP is that unlike all radio, as a ham radio operator or as a terrestrial broadcaster, television, radio, it doesn't matter. These signals start out single source point pretty much, and they go out in almost all directions with some rare specific exceptions, or even not so rare. We have directional radio stations and so forth. But basically, they want to cover as much territory. They start off small and get big. In the case of HARP, you start off big on the ground and get small, so you end up with a very tiny little area of intense concentration of incredible power at the ionospheric level.
Now, actually, the way a phased array antenna system works, the gentleman that called, he said he's an operator. Then he would know that the phased array antenna system, and this will get back to what Guy had imparted earlier, phases shifts of signals, and these are transmitted from individual elements.
Mm-hmm.
In such a way that they can be steered. That's the phased array.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it takes three of these large arrays.
I mentioned that.
Yeah, I should add to that that when HARP is active in certain modes, you will find two other signals in that narrow area that are operating on the same frequency. Those are two different antennas. That's not all coming from HARP.
Okay.
That's right.
By the way, just to get back to it, I did find it. Listen carefully. There's your baby at work. There's one signal from HARP, recorded by another amateur radio operator. Listen carefully. By the way, this was recorded at about 2.3 megahertz. That's one. This is another. And then there's the third, and I think for some reason with me, the most concerning... Isn't that interesting? Listen to those combination of frequencies that they're achieving. And it goes through other shifts as the audio signal continues. So I won't burden you with more of it. It's weird stuff. There's no question. Now, what do you suppose what we were just hearing was intended to achieve, gentlemen?
Well, the name of the array that the DoD says they canceled is Frequency Independent Phased Array Antenna. And the name indicates it's frequency independent. Those noises are definitely the same ones I'm hearing on my shortwave radio.
Yes. Oh, yes, it's there. I was just wondering, the question was, what do you think those sounds were intended to do?
I have no idea other than what we've been discussing over the past couple hours here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not sure those are genuine.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Yes, that's HARP. At least that's what's being at times transmitted by HARP. I guarantee you that is HARP.
Well, HARP publicly puts on their website their the frequency that they use.
That's right.
In the shortwave radio, you can turn to that frequency, and that's the noise that you get.
That's right. There are several frequencies in use. Early on, they enlisted hams in monitoring their signal. That was very early, a very early test, just sort of the beginning of the antenna system, but they're well beyond all that now. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Yes, good evening. This is John in New Orleans.
Hi, John.
Yes, sir, gentlemen. Gee, what a treat and a real true Sunday with a cherry on top.
Thanks, John.
Ever since I first heard of HARP, and then I learned how to spell it, I've been running in my head, Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down.
Yeah.
So in my mind, true or not, I'm just the kid at the kids' table over here on Thanksgiving, the small one. Y'all are at the adult table. But is it not the bottom line of HARP? Other uses, maybe, but the bottom line being that weapon to bring down the walls and structures of any enemy, and the byproduct being the way it treats the animals, including the human animals, as you spoke of earlier, you know, physically incapacitating them. So the structures and the humans.
Okay. Who wants that one?
Guy?
Thanks, Joe. In the case of people, I don't think we're there yet where we can actually incapacitate a person with HARP at any kind of a distance. I may be totally wrong about that, but my knowledge of a system like this would be that it can influence positive ions, and that'll have some effect on people, but it's not going to put everyone to sleep in NORAD in the middle of Colorado.
Uh-huh. Is the HARP facility itself safe for people to be at, or is it operated remotely for a reason?
Well, if you look at the pictures on the website, on the Superforce site,
mm-hmm.
Of HARP, you'll see there's an aircraft radar very close proximity to the aircraft alert radar, they call it, very close proximity to the array. The reason for that is you do not want a plane flying within that signal.
Right.
And they will shut down that signal if a aircraft comes in close proximity. That is about the only danger that you would have in the area.
The implication being, what for the airplane should it fly into the...
You'd probably fry most of the electrical components on the aircraft.
You would upset... You may cause an electrical anomaly to occur. I don't think that fry is necessarily the correct terminology here.
Well, 3 billion watts.
That's assuming. No, the question was was not an operational system. The question was flying over the phased array network.
Well, they do, in fact, as Guy mentioned, have a...
There's a no-fly zone.
Yes, and if a plane, we're speculating, if a plane did go through it, what the actual physical effect upon the airplane would be. And I thought the term fry under these conditions might not be all that far from what would happen. You have a disagreement, you two, on this? You don't like the word fry, Doctor?
Well, I wouldn't, even if
fry
I
is a little
agreed
bit
with Dr. Resnick, I wouldn't attempt it myself.
So you think fry is, well, sounds harsh.
I think it's an overstatement. I don't think fry. Hey, listen, there's a BAA up right now for a phased array for that young guy that asked me about the definition.
Yes?
There's a broad agency announcement at the DARPA website that maybe he should take a look at, BAA 95-39.
Okay. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer. Hi.
Hey, how are you doing? My name's John. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Okay, John, you're not real loud on the line, so you're going to have to yell at us a little.
Is that better?
Yeah, best you can do. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I had two quick questions. The first one might be a little bit off base, but I heard a rumor that an Israeli DJ, is a musical DJ, discovered a way through sound waves and different frequencies to purify water, and that the Coca-Cola company hired him to work on this.
No, there's no way to confirm what you're saying. I haven't heard about it. I'm not saying it isn't so, but I've not heard about it. And
it's
I doubt my guests have. Have you, guests?
The only thing I've heard about Coca-Cola and water was their little fiasco in England there where they were using tap water for their bottled product, and they when that was discovered a couple of months ago, they shut the process down.
Oh, okay. Well, my second question is if you guys could just explain a little bit more about fractals.
Fractals?
Yes.
Okay.
A fractal. Let's see. I'll give
Guy
you,
rocks in this area.
I'll give you a simple version. If you've seen a fern, you've seen a fractal because the leaves of the fern are identical to the fern itself. And in a more complex fractal, we could zoom in on that leaf and find that there's leaves within the leaf and on it goes. And so you have something that, at different scales, tends to look exactly the same as the largest object that you can see.
Huh. Isn't that something? And there goes our phone system getting crazy with us again. It does really odd things, kind of like I think HARP does. Surely you both would admit there could be unintended consequences involved in the operation of HARP. Could there not? I mean, surely the scientists cannot know every effect this is going to have, or even reasonably guess on what it might do at certain power levels and combinations of tones and such.
Well, I know with the shuttle accident taking place in the ionosphere, the comments were made over and over again that it's the ignorant sphere.
They call it the dumbosphere.
Yeah, because we really don't understand it that well.
No one knows it.
And like Einstein says, we know 1% of 1% of 1% of all there is to know. And definitely there are things that we do in any science that have unexpected consequences out there.
And at the moment, HARP is purely experimental.
Okay, but, you know, a lot of earlier science in America and the world was more local in terms of its consequences, wasn't it? In other words, I suppose finally, of course, we got to the atomic bomb, and that became more than local. But otherwise, a lot of science is quite local in terms of unintended consequences. But here, we're starting to tamper with, you know, the world's ionosphere, one whole level of our atmospheric shield or what's around our planet. We're toying with the whole thing. It's just sort of at a different level, isn't it, when you consider unintended consequences?
The same analogy could be drawn with regard to medicine in terms of
gene
splicing, etc.
You betcha. You betcha.
So, but
that doesn't...
I would agree with you in that regard.
You would?
I would. Sure.
So that's all I'm trying to suggest, that when you're considering unintended consequences, some of the work being done, as you point out, in the medical world and now in our whole atmosphere, It's so all-encompassing. I don't know that we've ever done that before, except for that atom bomb moment. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hi.
Good evening, Art. This is Robert from Vancouver Island, British Columbia.
Welcome.
Hey, listen on CFON 1410.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, listen, I have a comment to make about the power failure that occurred, which may have been related to something to do with HAARP in the year 2003 in August.
Okay.
What happened is that the Department of National Defense in Canada was requested by the Department of Defense in the United States to build a Tesla antenna at a communication research establishment which is just east of Ottawa. And apparently when they built this thing and tested it in August of 2003, they apparently blasted a hole through to the ionosphere, but it also caused a power surge which blew the grid for Quebec, Ontario,
yes,
and all the northeastern states. What I'm interested in knowing is if this was related to some research that they would be have been doing for HAARP.
It's a fair, straight-on question. Gentlemen, as we try and get past this stupid phone thing. Okay, there we go. I've, too, heard the rumors that man just spoke about, that there may have been something HAARP-related that caused that great blackout. Any comments? Anybody dare comment?
I think the reasons were actually quite simple, and other urban legends you might have heard is probably part of the disinformation process surrounding
HAARP. Yeah, I think somebody knocked the Coke over on a control panel.
You do, huh? So you don't think HAARP could have had the slightest thing to do with anything?
HAARP
like
doesn't
that.
Work that way.
And is there any possibility that HAARP could in any way affect power grids or the transmission of electricity over long lines?
Well, with a solar storm, we get that kind of an effect, radio blackouts and whatnot. So the potential is there.
Uh-huh. Okay. First of all, I really want to thank the both of you for saying as much as you have said and for being here tonight. And note that you neither one of you, or they didn't put it on here anyway, I guess you don't have books to sell, right?
No,
you're not selling any books.
No books.
But you do have a website, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Is it actually two websites or more than two or one main one you want to send people to or what if they want to know more?
Joe's got some websites there.
Yeah, they're on your site now. If people want to go look at this stuff, feel free to visit.
This would be the superforce.com site.
So all the links that should be up there are up there.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Is there a great deal of information on that website about HAARP?
With the information discussed tonight, I believe so.
Guy's website is pretty comprehensive.
I would like to ask this, too, that if anything occurs to either one of you after the show or in the next few days or weeks or months that you want to get out about HAARP, that you feel ought to be out about HAARP, I would hope that you would pick up the phone, contact my producer, and, you know, let it flow from there, right?
Certainly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Then I'm going to thank both of you for appearing on the program tonight. And it's been a pleasure having you and all that stuff, and show's over. So good night.
Good night. Thanks for having us.
Good night. Good night to everyone.
Yes, indeed. Good night. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. As I said to you earlier, it is going to be up to you in your own mind to decide whether what you just heard was the straight stuff. The straight stuff, perhaps in small nuggets, the straight or not straight stuff at all. Or whatever, but certainly we heard things about HAARP tonight that I had not heard before. Quite a number of things that it's going to take me a while to digest. In the meantime, that's it. Show's over. What a weekend. Thank you so very much from the high desert.